Hello and welcome to Lexitecture, a podcast about word origins and histories. My name is Ryan, and in each episode, my friend Amy and I bring a new pair of words to share their stories with each other and you. You can find our past episodes and the occasional blog post on our website at lexitecture.com. Follow along with us on Twitter and Facebook at Lexitecture. And if you really like what we do, you can support the show at patreon.com/lexitecture.
Today's episode, Weird Innuendo.
All right. Do you want to go first this time?
Okay, I will go first. So, the word I'm going to talk about today is innuendo.
Cool.
Now, I know, Ryan, that you are a lover of puns, and we're both lovers of, let's face it, inappropriate and slightly puerile humour.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is with great... Well, I'm sorry. It's with great sadness that I have to communicate to you, first of all, that that's not what the word innuendo means.
Oh.
I mean, it is what the word innuendo means. This is how we use it.
Yeah.
But it's not originally how this came about.
So, interesting.
To the OED... I haven't told you yet. I saw a tweet today by the very wonderful Matt Lucas... of Little Britain fame, and it said, sorry to bother you, OED, is there a word for the two bags of crisps that you eat while waiting for your dinner in the oven? I suggest you check out the comments. It's really quite enjoyable for anyone who likes words. Susie then responded almost immediately to say, perhaps it's a snacksident.
Oh, snacksident is perfect.
And there are various other suggestions for... what it is that particular situation should be called. So yeah, it's worth your attention.
While we're addressing the OED directly, sorry, I just realized I should have done this last time. A couple of weeks ago when I did the solo episode, I ran into the term Chinook jargon in the OED, and I was righteously indignant and...
Yes, I recall you posted about this on Facebook.
In the meantime, backing up a little, when we first started this podcast, I expected to deal with a rampant, insufferable pedantry. And so I always thought we would have a segment of the show called Dear Idiots, where we read out various pieces of pedantic hate mail that we got. I have been thrilled to say that you guys are all super, super polite and awesome. Because this was like by far the most feedback I got when I screwed up something. But it was all incredibly helpful and just, oh, by the way, here's this, you know. So Chinook jargon is an actual technical language name. So it still sucks and it still reeks of colonialism because jargon still means all that stuff. And originally it was called that because it was white people who were classifying it as a language. But it's not the OED's fault because it is an actual language.
It's rarely the OED's fault, dude.
I know, but they
just write stuff down.
I forgot that or something. Anyway, apologies to the OED. You're still awesome. I still think the language name sucks.
I don't know if this is the case, but I really want there to be a really, like, a sort of a very beautiful, classically architectured dream building somewhere where the OED is housed and where you can just go and visit. And like our listeners who don't send us Dear Idiots letters, where everyone's just really lovely.
Yeah,
you know, how can people who spend their days working for the benefit of the OED possibly be anything other than lovely?
Yeah, I think that's true. So anyway, that was my overdue apology to the OED and acknowledgement and thanks to everyone who gently and carefully and kindly corrected me on my idiocy.
So back anyway, to the innuendos.
Innuendo.
Innuendo. So the first definition of the OED, given by the OED for innuendo, is from 1564. And you'll like this. It actually refers to generally legal documents. And the first sense given is as a formula or to wit. You know that, and not as in to wit to woo, which is what I always think when I see that. So the medieval Latin formula used, especially in legal documents, to introduce a parenthetical explanation of the precise reference of a preceding noun or pronoun, meaning to wit, that is to say, innuendo.
Yeah.
So we get that in 1564, 1656, and 1701. Those are the citations given in the OED. And then we get, secondly, hence as a noun, the parenthetical explanation or specification itself. So the thing that was the explanation then became the innuendo.
Right.
So an interpolated or appended explanation of or construction put upon a word, expression, or passage, especially the injurious meaning or signification alleged to be conveyed by words not per se injurious or actionable,
which, in
an action for libel or slander, is usually introduced into the record and issue by the words meaning thereby after the expressions alleged to have been used.
Right.
This sounds like so much legalese that my poor little brain almost exploded. And I thought, if only there was someone I knew who'd just graduated from law school and could tell me what the hell is going on. So essentially innuendos were there to help us out, to explain, to give us a bit more information about those words. So we have things like, in this sense, from Daniel Defoe, I cannot find one word in the whole book which can, no, not with the help of an innuendo, be so much as pretended to look that way. So, quite interesting. We then get from there the words or expressions thus parenthetically explained or needing explanation, a blank to be filled up with the name of the person to whom it is alleged to refer. And from 1755 we get, by publishing the names at full length in your paper, I humbly conceive, said he, that you avoid all the troublesome consequences of innuendos. So I find this quite interesting.
That's interesting.
We're kind of getting there. Like, we're getting to the sense of an innuendo being something that you don't necessarily want to be associated with yourself. So then we get to sense three, an oblique hint, indirect suggestion, an elusive remark concerning a person or thing, especially one of a depreciatory kind. Excuse me, not depreciatory kind. And we get this from 1689, and citations coming until 1855. The cardinal omitted nothing in the way of anecdote or innuendo which could injure the character of the leading nobles.
Okay.
So yeah, the sense of an allusion, and that from there, the OED actually has nothing in its entry about matron rudeness, which I found really, really interesting. Because
that is interesting.
When you talk about innuendo, most people do exactly what we both did and giggle a little bit.
Yeah.
I have to tell you this joke. My husband and I were out for a walk before we did this recording, and I had said, you know, I'm recording at 3 o'clock, and he said, oh, which words are you talking about today? And I mentioned innuendo, and he said, did you hear about the man who went into a bar and asked the barmaid for a double entendre? So she gave him one. Yeah, I thought you would like that.
I do like that.
He's always very pleased when people laugh at his jokes. I don't know, maybe I'm not always that person, let's just say.
Maybe not.
But yeah, so we would, you know, we could talk at great length about the difference between a double entendre and an innuendo and all the rest of it. But, you know, this sense of things being a little bit rude or a little bit hidden, the closest we get to that is this third sense, which is saying it's an oblique hint or an indirect suggestion.
Yeah.
So etymologically, what's actually going on? Well, interesting. Innuendo actually means by nodding at or pointing to, meaning or intimating. It comes from what we have the in part.
Yeah.
I didn't realise there's also a pi root en, which is the source of that preface that we would almost not notice. You know, it says in, so it means inside.
Interesting.
And that's then added to nuere, n-u-e-r-e, from Latin, meaning to nod. So to innuendo, or to use an innuendo, is to nod at something.
I cannot believe that the Monty Python sketch Wink Wink Nudge Nudge is actually the etymological origin story of the word innuendo.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. So it's an interesting one. So I'm thinking about nod, and I also then, you know, I had a little look at cognates, and the most interesting cognate coming from this root of nuere, nodding, is the word numinous. Another word that doesn't get enough time, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, numinous is awesome.
It's just a lovely word to say. It tastes good in your mouth. Numinous, the OED defines as, firstly, of or relating to a numen, revealing or indicating the presence of a divinity, divine, spiritual. Now, a numen is a sort of a demigod, a spiritual being. So okay. We then get the kind of extended use, so giving rise to a sense of the spiritually transcendent or evoking a heightened sense of the mystical or sublime, awe-inspiring. And this same sense of nodding comes into the etymology of the word numinous. Here, however, it's the sense that the nod is coming from a deity. So not just God is on your side, God has given you the nod. And having the nod from God leads to a sense of heightened awe and spirituality.
Interesting.
The numen, N-U-M-E-N, also has various significances within psychology and theology, and seems to refer to sort of the spirituality of anything. It's Newman. So that's kind of discussed. There's a very famous book by a guy called R. Otto called Idea of Holy, a German book, where he talks at great length about Newman. And he says, the numinous is thus felt as objective and outside the self. So the sense that objects and other things and other qualities, not just people, can have this spiritual sense, it seems to be wrapped up in this notion of Newman. And again, from Idea of Holy, this is quite lovely, from 1923. For this purpose, I adopt a word coined from the Latin numen. Omen has given us ominous, and there is no reason why, from numen, we should not similarly form a word numinous. I shall speak of a unique numinous category of value, and of a definite numinous state of mind. Now, this is interesting because Otto did not coin the word numinous. It originally comes from, the earliest citation is from 1647, both in the sense of relating to a numen or indicating the presence of divine. So while the specific concept of numen he was perhaps giving a different shade to, he didn't invent the word. But I love the sense of ominous versus numinous in terms of the nod itself.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So that brings us back to innuendo, where we are nodding to, usually these days we're nodding to something that's a little bit rude, let's face it. And I had a look at that very well-respected, much-cited source, Reddit, and found that there is indeed a subreddit called Innuendos,
which, of course,
gave us, it's mainly pictures, it seems to mainly be pictures that people have kind of noted in the wild. So we have things like a sign that says heavy duty whole hog from Milwaukee, a kid's toy called Smackers, which on the packaging has the slogans, move wrist up and down, bang balls together, how many times can you smack them? We've also got the classic, a picture of a gentleman called Ben Dover.
Right, yeah.
And I did enjoy this one from a Lego superheroes box. Enter the Dark Knight. So whether we're nodding at gods and spirituality, or whether we're nodding at the humour of a 12-year-old boy, we are still nodding with our innuendo, which may or may not make us feel numinous.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's, I love that. I also really like the idea that there's evidence of a person being like, being really clever and inventing, quote, a word and be like, I'm going to coin this word
because
this is the other thing. And then just being like, actually, no.
Nice try.
But it's
fine, I mean,
anyway.
To give him his due, the book is translated from the German. and I'm looking at the translation. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't know how. I don't know how German. I don't know if it has the word numinous from an earlier period in time, and which word it is that's being translated. So
yeah
there is a bit of nuance to be added to that.
Yeah.
That particular. Well, you can't invent a word because it's already there.
That's
but
very
yeah,
cool.
I like that too.
Love it. I
didn't
love
even mention the Queen album. God, I was going to do that. Well, I suppose I just did.
Yeah, there you go. Error corrected.
Yes.
Very cool. My word is weird.
Ooh, nice.
And so I'll just grab, I was already on the American Heritage Dictionary site, which gave a pretty good summary of sort of the way we usually use the word weird now, which is as an adjective to mean strikingly odd or unusual, especially in an unsettling way, or suggestive of the supernatural. And so I think those two things kind of sum up more or less how everyone uses the word weird now. Like, kind of odd.
I'm excited because I know this word.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So the thing that when I started reading about this, oddly enough, the thing that immediately leapt to mind was a totally different etymology, which is the result of, it's basically Bugs Bunny's contribution to the lexicon.
Which and should never be underestimated.
Yeah. This might just be an American or North American slang. In your experience, have you ever heard the word Nimrod being used to mean like idiot, moron, buffoon?
In fairness, largely in Bugs Bunny. In the Bugs Bunny context, yeah.
So the story behind Nimrod, really quickly, is that in 1932, a Looney Tunes cartoon aired with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Elmer Fudd, and they dismissively and sarcastically called Elmer Fudd Nimrod, that little Nimrod. And it was a reference to the biblical character Nimrod.
The hunter.
A hunter, a mighty hunter. And so they were being sarcastic and being like, look at little Nimrod over there. But enough people didn't really know the story or didn't catch the reference or didn't care enough about the reference. And it just became an insult word, just a generic word for idiot or buffoon. And so that's where it went into the kind of common lexicon as an idiot, was from essentially a misunderstanding of an original and earlier usage of it.
And that's why etymology is awesome.
Exactly.
If you wanted a beautiful example of that situation, then I don't think you could find a much better one than biblical references being used as insults.
Yeah, through cartoons, and then kids pick them up and away they go. And that's it sort of parallels this use of weird and the way we got weird to mean what it does now as an adjective is thanks to none other than the only William Shakespeare. And it's because of Macbeth specifically and the weird sisters that give him his Hail Banquo, Hail Macbeth, Hail Bubble Bubble, Coil and blah, blah, blah. Those ladies. And so enough people basically saw them. They became popular figures or continued to be popular figures, as I found out. And then the weird sisters, just weird and sisters became detached and weird came to mean what it means now. The earliest entries in the OED for this sense of weird are all from like the early 1800s, and they're all either from Shelley or Keats.
Oh, interesting.
Which is odd. So we've got a little list right now. So 1817, we get a usage that a sense of partaking of or suggestive of the supernatural, mysterious or unearthly character. That's from Shelley. 1816 is all of that stuff, but specifically to do with voices or sounds.
Mm.
1816, of strange or unusual appearance, and all three of those are Shelley. And then 1820, out of the ordinary course, strange or unusual, and that one's from Keats.
I love this, because romantic poets, I feel like there's some Shakespeare fanboying going on here.
Yes.
And just because it happened to be done by two romantic poets who went on to be, you know, incredibly famous and well-respected romantic poets, doesn't take away the fanboying. It's like how Bach as a composer was largely forgotten about for quite a long time. And the composer Mendelssohn, is one of the people who was specifically responsible for rekindling an interest in the works of J.S. Bach. And it feels kind of crazy now to think that people wouldn't have heard of Bach, but you know, Mendelssohn really championed his music and his compositions and his and all of his works, and got him to that point where everybody knew about it. So yeah, don't underestimate fanboying in both art, music, and literature. It's
important. Exactly. Because now, I mean, if anyone's going to have heard of only one of those two, it will be Bach. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Now, so weird, that was not that early 1800s. Is not the first time weird was used as an adjective, obviously. The way the earlier usage as an adjective and what Shakespeare meant was, according to the OED, quote, having the power to control the fate or destiny of human beings. And this dates from around 1400. But it's interesting because it's always all of the earliest usage, basically from the 1400s up to Shakespeare's usage, it's always the weird sisters. Like it's always part of that phrase.
Uh-huh.
And it basically just meant the fates or the weirds.
The women who control the destiny.
Yeah, they're just the fates. The noun form of weird is much, much, much older.
Mm.
And it was in the earliest uses, it was always plural. And the weird sisters were just the weirds. And it was basically just the word for the fates.
Okay.
In the late 800s, so again, we're back to that. What the hell does 885 even mean?
And Saxons and all that jazz.
Good old King Alfred is the first provider of a sense of the principal power or agency by which events are predetermined, or fate or destiny. And then in the early 8th century, so in the 700s is where the weirds came from as a plural noun for the fates, there's also a singular use that says that which is destined. Mm. So it's basically the same way we can say the word fate, and it either means like your fate or as fate would have it.
Okay.
It's either the thing that's destining something or the thing that is destined by that power.
Right. That makes sense, I suppose.
And so weird was the same thing. The weird was either the power that destines something to become reality or the thing that's going to become reality. This comes from Old English, obviously, because we're already in Old English in 725 AD. But it comes from Old Saxon. And basically jumps right from to Old Saxon from Proto-Indo-European.
Oh.
So the pi root is where, W-E-R. And this we've actually, this is one of those things where I had the weird deja vu. And I kind of went, wait, I know I've talked about this pi root before.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that. It's a familiar one.
And it was in episode 53 where we got to talk about varmint with Helen Zaltzman.
Ah, nice.
And the where root here is the same one that gives us the word worm and universe, and it means to turn or to bend.
Ah, okay.
And so Edam Online, the hypothesis advanced by Edam Online is that this sense was a sort of a turning into or becoming, or the, sort of the wheel of time sense, I guess, of fate.
That's beautiful,
and
isn't
that's
it?
How we get from
the twists and turns of fate.
Yeah, and that's how we get from where to turn or to bend to weird, the weirds, the weird sisters, and people being called weird.
Amazing.
Not that I would know anything about that.
I love weird in terms of fate, and I don't know if you came across this phrase as part of your research. I suspect not, because you probably would have enjoyed it, but. You can also dree your weird. Have you heard this before?
No.
This is one of these fairly wonderful examples of having my own language brought back to me, because this is a phrase that came to my attention via the Terry Pratchett book, The Wee Free Men. Have you read these books?
I haven't. I have read woefully few Terry Pratchett books.
Well, these particular ones, they're a bit later, and they're, I think they're designed to be children's books rather than, you know, sort of specifically for, I don't know, I'm not really big on giving books an age, only these people can read these books kind of limit.
Right, yeah.
But they're designed more for younger readers. And the protagonist of these books is Tiffany Aching, who is kind of wants to be a witch, thinks she might be a witch, but is in a part of the Discworld where witchcraft is not allowed, not encouraged, and thought to be pretty much impossible. And she is befriended by these fairy creatures, which is, you know, that there's a great deal of sort of hilarity about how don't call us fairies, because they're called the Nak McFeagle, and they are a race of tiny troll-like creatures, little blue men. And basically they're the Discworld equivalent of the Scots. And the wee free men, or Pixies, as they are also referred to.
Oh, nice.
They like fighting and drinking and drinking and fighting and fighting and drinking and stealing. Right? So stereotypes be damned. You know, I do enjoy the wee free men quite a bit. And one of the things that comes up frequently is that Tiffany doesn't always understand the wee free men, because the wee free men speak this kind of Discworldy brand of slightly cartoonish Scots. And at one point, one of the wee free men talks about Drian is weird. And Tiffany's like, well, don't do it in here, for goodness sake, at least go outside. And there's a lovely moment where she's been told not to fash herself so many times that she kind of steps off and says to another character, am I fashing myself? Is this the thing? Please tell me if I am. Dinna fash yourself. And so Drian, you're weird means facing your fate, basically.
Oh.
And it's amusing me a great deal, because I looked it up while you were talking about weird, and it's listed in Wiktionary as to dree one's weird, which sounds very, very kind of formal and fancy, and not Scots in the slightest. But I hadn't heard of that particular usage in Scots myself through my experience of hearing and using and reading about Scots, but I did hear it in The Wee Free Men. And yeah, I love it, much in the same way that death used to be a bigger part of our lives. I'd much rather live in a world where magic was too.
Yeah.
Fate.
Oh, yeah.
And hubris and the gods and all that stuff that exists in books and that, you know, you grow out of and you learn that it's not really true. Damn those people that spoil those things. You know, I'm quite happy to have a fate, even if it means that my free will is not quite up to scratch. And yeah, I'm happy to dream a weird.
Absolutely. Just don't do it in here.
No, definitely.
And that's it for another episode of Lexitecture. To get in touch with us about something you heard in this episode, you can email us at words@lexitecture.com. You can also follow along and talk to us at Lexitecture on Facebook and Twitter, and at Lexitecture Podcast on Instagram. For back episodes and the occasional blog post, visit us at lexitecture.com. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.